Or just don't want the bother of selling it, the WLRN vehicle donation program can help. Just call 877-WLRN-CAR, 877-957-6227, or donate online at WLRN.org. Donating is easy when the tow truck comes to your home and picks up the vehicle. They give you the paperwork that you'll need and relieve the stress of what to do with the old car that just won't sell. That's 877-WLRN-CAR, or donate online at WLRN.org.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman on this Monday afternoon. Today's At Your Service topic on Topical Currents is wage theft. As we'll hear in depth, there are many forms of it. Bonnie, how about our guests?
Well, we have the Executive Director of South Florida Interfaith Worker Justice with us. She's Jeanette Smith. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Good to see you. And we also have Fort Lauderdale-based employment attorney Donna Ballman here as well. She's been a frequent contributor on the program, and she has more than 20 years of experience in the field. Welcome back to you, Donna Ballman.
Thanks for having me back.
And
we also have Cynthia Hernandez. She's a senior research associate at FIU Center for Labor Research and Studies. And she's also joining us here in the studio and is just getting settled in. Hello, Cynthia Hernandez.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Hi. So I'll just pose this question and you can take it, Cynthia, Jeanette, Donna, whomever would like to. It might appear self-evident, but would you define wage theft and cite some of the most common manifestations and some of the not-so-obvious manifestations?
It is odd how it seems typical, but people usually don't know what it is. That wage theft is when you've worked and you've not been paid, basically. And that could be that you were promised a certain amount and you weren't paid that particular salary. In some of the most egregious cases, you weren't paid at all. You weren't paid for overtime, perhaps, and you were due that. Some of the other types of wage theft could be if your employer was supposed to provide certain safety equipment, for example, and didn't provide it and you had to pay for that yourself. That would be a form of wage theft. Also, misclassification, where you're classified as an independent contractor when you're actually an employee so that the employer doesn't need to pay the taxes. That would also be wage theft.
Okay, and what industries, I mean, I read that it's even among the medical profession, the legal profession. What industries are the most affected?
The most affected here in Florida and really nationwide are the low-wage industries. So primarily looking at the service industries, retail, hotel, restaurant, construction as well. But it also occurs in the paraprofessional industry. So this is where you're paraprofessionals come in, such as teachers, private school teachers, attorneys, accountants,
architects,
and telemarketers as well.
Yeah, there's no real exception. It's across the board. Listen, employers are out there. They're trying to save money. And so instead of paying their employees, they're pocketing their paychecks and spending it on something else. Well, that's pure and simple theft.
Is it common for some small employers to say, well, we can't pay you now or I'll be out of business, so it's just tough?
Yeah, I mean, I see this all the time when we're approaching employers saying, why haven't you paid? Oh, we don't have the money. Well, okay, but you had the money to pay for your yacht or your Lexus or to pay for that new equipment. Shouldn't you pay your employees? And the law doesn't excuse that. We don't have the money isn't an excuse, and some of the principals could actually be personally liable.
And I would just add that we actually see a lot of this in the construction industry where there are many levels of contracting. So we have a subcontractor who's paid by the contractor, and oftentimes the money runs out somewhere in between the project and workers don't get paid. So it's very difficult then for workers to go and collect their wages when there's so many different layers.
And Jeanette, you wanted to add something?
I did. On the construction industry, it's particularly interesting because I remember one particular employer who was a subcontractor saying that he put in a bid for the job that was, it was low, it was very tight. So if anything were to come up, he wasn't going to be able to cover the extra expenses, which is why he didn't pay his workers. And his comment to me was, well, Jeanette, if I hadn't put in that bid, I would have sat home for 3 months. I said, well, you should have sat home for 3 months because you still hired people and people were still working.
That's Jeanette Smith. We're also speaking with Cynthia Hernandez and Attorney Donna Ballman. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, we're at your service today, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org, and Twitter.
Twitter is at Topical Currents. I'd like to go back to 2010 when Miami-Dade County passed this law protecting the wage theft ordinance, and it was one of the few places in the country with such protection. How is the law enforced, and how's it working?
That's an interesting question. I know Donna's going to want to add something to that. Initially, just to be clear why we needed this, wage theft happens all around the country, but Florida is one of the few states that has no state-level Department of Labor, so we have even less protections for workers here. And when it was passed, the idea was to make it as expedient as possible, that people could get paid very quickly, their policy would be conciliation with the employer, and if that didn't work out, it would go on to an administrative hearing process. And initially, the conciliation worked out quite well. The hearings didn't start for about 9 months, so there was a bit of a backlog when they started. And the hearings are still going on. It's moved to another department now. But we are still working out. Well, a great deal has been collected, and I know Cynthia has exact numbers. I think Donna's run into a few of the issues with enforcing some of the judgments, the way they're set up.
Yeah, I'd say that overall, it's a really good thing because the courts are so backed up right now with foreclosures that it's very hard to get a quick remedy in court. So the Miami-Dade Wage Theft Ordinance has enabled us to get some quick judgments. A couple of glitches. We noticed early on that they were requiring service of the employer by certified mail, and I think they're still doing that. Even though it says that the rules of civil procedure apply, which means that you could serve normally by email once the initial service is done. So we were having cases where we were showing up to hearings. People would sit there all day taking off of their new jobs, and then the hearing got canceled because the employer wasn't there, and they, oh, we don't have the certified mail. So we complained about that, and that seems to have been resolved a little bit, so we're not running into that. And then the next thing is, okay, you get a ruling from the referee, the master that's issuing the judgment, and they say, yes, we're going to issue a judgment, but it can take months to actually get that judgment issued. Then when you get the judgment, you have to record it with the clerk of court. Well, the clerk of court didn't really know what to do with them, so we found that we were in situations where we were having to hand walk it and instruct them how to do it. And now even we have several judgments that we've recorded and we've done all that stuff. And now the question is collection. Well, to collect, you're still going to have to file. If the employer doesn't just pay it, you're still going to have to file a lawsuit in court to collect that judgment. So you're stuck in that waiting system. And then you have a judgment, great, but then you have to go through procedures to enforce it. So it
doesn't
is a
that
long
cost. Doesn't that cost a lot of money to keep filing?
Well, it does. You know, there's a filing fee, and it depends on the amount of the judgment, what the filing fee would be, whether it's in county court or circuit court. But yeah, it's long and drawn out, and it shouldn't be. I don't understand why employees who take $2 of stamps from an employer can be prosecuted and thrown in jail, but an employer who steals thousands of dollars from employees isn't similarly facing jail time. I don't understand why the Dade and the Broward ordinances don't throw
what
employers in
jail. What about the Broward ordinance? How does it differ?
There are some differences, and I can talk about it, but the wages due date are the same. Now wages are due and date in Broward County within 14 days after the services were performed, unless there's a regularly established pay schedule. Nowhere else in the state is there a deadline for payment. In Broward, you're required to send a demand letter. Dade, you're not. Both deadlines are 1 year from the date that you perform those services. The filing is a little different, what they each require for filing. Service is a little different. The hearing notice is a little different. More importantly, the remedies are a little different. And Broward, you can get twice the amount that's owed you. In Dade, you can get three times the amount that's owed you. In Dade, you can't get attorney fees. In Broward, you can. So,
Do attorneys take these cases on contingency?
Yes. I would say that yes. There's really, if you've got somebody who's not getting paid, there's probably not much choice. So yes, either a contingency or partial contingency is probably the more common way to do it. So the fees in Dade are going to come right out of that employee's money that's owed them, which is unfortunate. The employer should have to pick up those fees.
And why can't that be amended?
Well, it could be, but aren't any county commissioners listening? You should amend it and have the employer pay those fees.
If I could add, I think that one of the things that Broward benefited from, because there are a number of community groups that are involved with the Wage Theft Task Force that first worked to with the county to draft this ordinance and to start this process in Miami-Dade. And what we always have said to other counties is learn from our experience. So look at what's worked and what's not worked and what you can tweak. And I can say that in Broward, the reason that they added the attorney fees was because they were only doing two times the amount. So that was the way they justified it, instead of three times the original amount that was owed. That was the adjustment they made. You'll be pleased to know, Don, I had a meeting with the Wage Theft Program here in Miami-Dade a few weeks ago, and they're actually changing how service is done. And once they get that original service with the original notice that there is a claim, you don't have to go through that process again. It can just be by mail, not email, unfortunately, but
by mail. It should
be
email, because why are we spending tax dollars on mail when the rules of civil procedure say email? So they say that you follow the rules of civil procedure. Why not just do it by email? Save those tax dollars. Why should we have to spend that money to serve employers when email is available?
I would like to just quickly add that looking at the data from these cases that are coming in through to Miami-Dade, most of the cases have been resolved through conciliation, which is the first phase. So most of them are being resolved and not going on to hearings, which is an easier way, obviously, to collect the funds and money that is owed.
What percentage of them?
I don't have that exact number, but I would say the majority.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It would be a little stronger if instead of conciliation, which sometimes I'm sad to say consists of, hello, employer, you've got this wage theft claim. Do you want to settle it? No? Okay. If the employer doesn't want to engage, then there's no engagement, but maybe a mandatory mediation program would be something that could be put in place that would settle a lot more of these cases.
Cynthia Hernandez of FIU, tell us more about the Equal Opportunity Board.
Okay, so initially we had actually, with the Wage Theft Task Force here in Miami-Dade, looked to the Equal Opportunity Board to implement the Wage Theft Ordinance. And then I think the decision was made that instead the Small Business Development Office, which is also within the county, was better suited because they also administered the Living Wage Ordinance. And since then, the program has actually now been shifted over to Consumer Services, and that's where it's at the county.
There is an interesting note about the Equal Opportunity Board. When that was first under consideration, the board members said that they actually saw a lot of wage theft cases. It didn't directly fall under their jurisdiction with the Human Rights Ordinance, but sometimes they could show it as a discrimination case. One worker's paid and perhaps another worker, a lower-level worker, wasn't paid. So that was an interesting thing, that it existed before the ordinance was in place.
Again, we're speaking about wage theft on today's program with Cynthia Hernandez and Donna Ballman and Jeanette Smith. If you want to call in, if you have questions, comments, the number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Email is radio@WLRN.org. And Twitter is @topicalcurrents. I'm interested to know what the penalties are for the employers that do commit wage theft.
Just a judgment. I mean, that's really it.
And so they have
to
pay it.
They can you can end up paying the fees of the other side. So that's really it. And there's no penalty. Why aren't there criminal penalties? I don't know. I mean, anybody else that steals even a dollar faces criminal penalties. Why does an employer who pockets the money to pay off their car or their yacht and not pay their employees not face some criminal penalties? I don't know. And it's interesting because industry has been really against these ordinances. And from my point of view, I would think that legitimate industry would want to enforce the laws against these thieving employers, because how are you going to compete on as a business person, if you are legitimate and you do pay your employees, with somebody who's just not paying their employees. You can't compete with that because it's a major cost that they're wiping out. So there are employers there that'll just hire people, not pay them, they fire them. Some of them will fight, some of them won't, some of them just give up. And so it's a huge cost reduction for these illegitimate thieving employers. And I would think that legitimate industry would want to get on them and say, yes, throw them in jail. Stop this practice so that we can fairly compete.
I'm sorry, go on.
I was just going to add that there is administrative fees that when an employer is found to be guilty has to pay. That number is $350, which is obviously nothing. But there was some mention that perhaps once an employer is found to have violated the wage theft ordinance, to possibly revoke their business license if it was tied to the county. That hasn't moved forward yet, but that is something that is on the table.
One of the problems with that actually is that it was considered, we have a business tax, because that was a recent conversation and it wasn't going to work out quite as they wanted, but some of the commissioners did think that was a good idea, that payment of at least that amount to the county, if not also what was owed to the employee, should be tied to business licenses. But I did want to mention, we have theft of services on the books here in Florida, and we had looked at that, but the problem with that is that you'll have to show that there was some sort of intent, and that's difficult, because how do you show that someone intended not to pay unless you can show a pattern of non-payment to other people, and locating those people can be difficult. But I'm a big believer in throw them in jail, but I also am a big believer in how can we get the money quickly into the pockets of the workers.
And there should be some enforcement mechanisms that the counties have, because it shouldn't have to be now another step to go to the courts. So I would think that putting some sort of enforcement power on the counties, whether it be criminal penalties or fines or something, that there are consequences to this, instead of having the poor employee have to go through even more steps and spend more money out of pocket to enforce, that would be really helpful, and it would probably stop some of these thieves in their tracks.
I just have one other question, then you want to go to the phones. Just one other question. What's the story with the Florida Retail Federation? It seems they've taken a stand against wage theft, so why these efforts to prohibit municipalities from adopting the ordinances that address it?
If I could, I've spent 3 years in Tallahassee dealing with the Florida Retail Federation, who right after the ordinance passed, by the way, they challenged it in court, and rather than wait for that judgment, they then tried to pass preemption legislation in Tallahassee, so that saying that it's the state's responsibility to address this and not the counties or local municipalities, but then they didn't want to pass anything at the state level. Now, eventually they did lose in court. The judge said that that passing this sort of local ordinance is exactly what local government should be doing to protect its residents, in his decision. But they claim that they would like, that it's unfair, that it presumes that the employer is guilty ahead of time. What is interesting is that most of their members wouldn't even fall into the jurisdiction of the local ordinances. They would be the Federal Department of Labor. They say that they would like something uniform. And we've said, great, let's do that at the state level. Their idea of uniform is, let's push people back into the court system, which they already can do right now. Mm-hmm. So, and there are a lot more details with that. But it's, I wanted to believe when we first began that they really thought wage theft was wrong. I started out thinking, well, we all think wage theft is wrong. Thou shalt not steal. We've got the message. But I think somewhere along the line, I realized in dealing with them the past 3 years that it's not that they think it's right, but they think it's the occasional cost of doing business, and when it happens, they don't want it to affect their members.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call or two. First up, it's Mike in Miami. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. You just touched on a particular point that I called about, and that is there are a lot of big chains. You can go after the small guy who just doesn't pay his people, the subcontractor, that type of thing. But there's a lot of big chains, including Walmart, was brought to court. These are the richest people in America, stealing from almost the poorest people in America. And they've been to court many times because they require people to work off the clock, come in early, set up, stay up late, stay out, stay afterwards, punch out before they go into overtime. And there's a lot of that going on as worker intimidation, where workers are forced to work hours that they're never compensated for, and no one seems to consider that wage theft.
Well, it is wage theft, and you're protected. There's the Fair Labor Standards Act, which covers those things like overtime and unpaid wages and making people work off the clock, which is obviously illegal, but it also is covered by the wage theft ordinances. So there are consequences, but going through the court system is long and drawn out, which is the whole point of these county ordinances, to try to speed up the process. Where people like Walmart get hit is when there's class actions where they can prove that it's been done to hundreds or thousands of employees. Then they sort of pay attention when you get a class action together. And there are a lot of lawyers that do just process these class actions on wage claims, and they've been getting a lot of attention because it is rampant.
And I think it's really important to note that, I mean, the real reason why this wage theft ordinance exists in the first place is because there are so many gaps in the federal labor laws. Millions of workers in Florida are not covered by federal labor laws. And so that is one of the reasons why the Wage Theft Task Force created this program to help workers who are not covered by those laws.
We have an emailer. David in North Miami Beach worked as a substitute teacher on February 9, 2010 for $94, but will not be paid without retroactive recertification, which is $100 plus.
Well, you can't just not pay somebody. If you let somebody work, then you have to pay them. The fact that maybe you shouldn't have let them work because they weren't certified, that doesn't excuse you from payment. On the other hand, you got some deadlines to do some of this stuff. You got 1 year under the wage theft ordinances. You got 2 years for most unpaid wages, possibly 3 years if it's a willful violation. So you can't just sit on your rights and wait 3 years.
So he's too late to do anything now?
Well, I'm not going to give legal advice on a specific case, but I'd say that it's seems like maybe he could have been a little faster.
Yeah, we need to reinforce that disclaimer. We're not giving specific legal advice, but just general discussion. Next up, it's Andre in Doral. Hi.
Yes, hi. How are you? Excellent discussion topics. I wanted to weigh in terms of, have you done any research in terms of, for two things? The first one being, if let's say, for example, I live in Broward County and I work for a subcontractor in Dade County, and I wanted to go ahead, and he doesn't pay me, so I want to take him to court. Can I take him to where it's based on my residence? And the reason for that is, you know, since Broward seems to have a little bit more faster process. And then the second one is, have you done any study in terms of the recession at this point, informal work, meaning that, you know, people have to work regardless. Okay, so this subcontractor didn't pay me, but I don't have the money nor the time to wait on court. So it's like, you know, I'll just take it under the table is the best way I can say that. It's like, or has that affected because of the recession? I mean, you got a job, just be grateful that we didn't pay you the hours, but you have a job kind of deal. Thank you.
Unfortunately, I'd say that that is true. A lot of employers feel that you should be grateful, and a lot of employees feel that they should be grateful or are scared if they can't find something else, so they tend to tolerate the postponement of pay. But I did just want to briefly touch on the first issue you raised. It's not your residence that matters when it comes to local wage theft ordinances. It's where the work was performed. So if it was performed in Miami-Dade County, you would fall under the Miami-Dade County program if you meet the other qualifications. If it was performed in Broward County, you would fall under Broward County. It doesn't even have to do with the headquarters or office of the employer, but where the work was performed.
I'm sure it's very common for people to be paid under the table. And if you accept that you're being paid under the table, then when you have a dispute, you really have no footing.
Well, you know, employers are supposed to pay you correctly. And so even if you're paid under the table, if they're not paying you, then you have rights. Just because the employer is doing it illegally, which it is illegal to pay under the table and not to pay those taxes, then you still have remedies. And the law would say that you can do basically your best reconstruction of those hours. And the employer, it's on the employer to keep track of those hours. So you can do your best reconstruction if you can show emails, any
work
GPS,
schedules.
Work schedules, all of that stuff, work that you did on the computer at a particular time. There's all kinds of ways. A lot of times key cards will show what time you were in and out. So all that stuff has to be paid for. If your employer requires you to get there 15 minutes earlier than your shift, then you have to be paid for that 15 minutes. There's all kinds of ways that employers are cheating people out of wages.
So if you feel you're on shaky ground, it probably would be a good idea to Xerox the employee schedule.
Oh, yes.
And have that in your records.
And if you think you're being ripped off, then keep track of your own hours. Mm-hmm. Keep it separately, because a lot of employers will go back and change time and stuff like that. So if you can keep your own running log of your hours, I think it's incumbent on you to do that anyhow, because you need to look at every paycheck and make sure you're paid.
But aren't those who report wage theft so vulnerable to termination?
Well, it's illegal to retaliate against someone for objecting to not being paid. That doesn't mean it won't happen. It happens all the time. I have people right now, in my office that have been terminated for objecting to not being paid. But it is illegal retaliation. So there are whistleblower laws. The Fair Labor Standards Act also prohibits retaliation for objecting to not being paid. So there are laws that do protect people.
What's the average amount of your clients who are in these disputes on wage theft that you're dealing with?
You know, I'd say I don't deal as much with wage theft as things like discrimination and non-compete agreements and stuff like that, but I'd say that it's drastically increased over the past couple of years since the Great Recession. We're running into people who, what is very typical is an employer gets further and further and further behind, and the people just keep hanging in there thinking they're going to get paid and rely on promises, and then by the time they give up and say it's time to leave, they're owed thousands of dollars. We had one that we got a judgment for over $60,000. So it's really tough out there.
I would say the average amount of recovered wages for the entire state of Florida is anywhere between $5,000 to $8,000 per person. That is basically being owed to them.
And I think at one point in Miami-Dade County, the claims that came in, they said the average claim was about $750. So again, that brings back a lot of low-wage workers in service industries.
You mentioned the Fair Labor Standards Act. Who's covered by that?
Most employees are covered by it. There are some exceptions, but I'd say in most cases, people are covered by it. There are exceptions. A lot of truckers aren't covered. There are certain smaller employers that you have to have for most employers at least $500,000 in gross receipts a year. Some employers are less than that, but so most employers, and they have to engage in interstate commerce, which is again most employers. So I'd say most people are covered, but there are these subgroups that are not covered. And that's where it gets really hairy for them, because where do you go if you're not covered?
I'd like to also add that we do have a federal Department of Labor, and we have offices here throughout the state that help workers recover their wages. However, what we're seeing is this trend where they don't have the resources to help, or the jurisdiction to help these workers. And many of them are actually now being sent over to either the Broward Wage Theft Program or the Miami-Dade Wage Theft Program.
There's an interesting case that came in that there's a very cooperative relationship between the Federal Department of Labor here in Miami and the Miami-Dade Wage Theft Program. And there was an interesting case where there were RNs that were covered under FLISA, under the Fair Labor Standards Act, but then there were home health care workers that were not covered. So the federal government and the county government worked together in order to recover the money. And I can say that from the county side, the home health care workers, it's like $145,000 for those workers and about the same amount for the RN. So that was an interesting example of them working together to resolve a wage theft claim that fell under the two jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. The good news for home health care workers is they're now going to be covered.
Yes.
and domestic workers.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yes.
We're speaking with Cynthia Hernandez. She's with the Research Institute on Social and Economic Policy at FIU, Florida International University. Donna Ballman is Fort Lauderdale-based labor and employment attorney. And Jeanette Smith is executive director, South Florida Interfaith Worker Justice. On today's Topical Currents, we'll take a short break. We'll come back. We'll take more of your calls.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. We're funded by listeners like you and by the Lincoln Motor Company, featuring a panoramic retractable roof on the 2013 Lincoln MKZ that opens up to over 15 square feet of skylight. More at Lincoln.com.
Miami City Ballet opens the season October 18th with performances in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and West Palm, featuring the music of Tchaikovsky, the choreography of Balanchine, and new works by today's leading choreographers. Season tickets are available for West Side Story Suite, Don Quixote, and The Nutcracker. More details at 877-929-7010 or online at miamicityballet.org.
We're funded by listeners like you and by Wine by the Bay in downtown Miami, carrying Harlan, Colgan, 100 Acre, Bryant Family, Schaefer, and more rare and collectible California wines. Details at winebtb.com.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're joined by Cynthia Hernandez, Jeanette Smith, and Donna Ballman. The topic is wage theft. If you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also radio at WLRN.org if you prefer to email.
Yes, and you can tweet at Topical Currents.
We have some lines open.
Okay. You want to take a call? Or?
Okay. This is Carlos in Pembroke Pines. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Question. About if a full-time person, let's say they work in a salary, but you have to work more than your 8 hours, you have to stay evenings, even maybe work on Saturday, Sunday. There's any regulation about that? That's the first question. And the second one is, you know, even if they let you go, because in this job, even, you know, ladies used to cry because they have so much work, and, you know, if they tell you, you want to leave, perfect, we're going to give you this document. If you want, you can sign it. And we'll give you 1 or 2 weeks, but you cannot complain anything about what's going on here in the company.
Okay. Well, the first thing is just because you're paid a salary doesn't mean you're exempt from overtime. And most employers get this wrong. So there are very limited exemptions. There are exemptions for certain professionals. For instance, most RNs are exempt, but LPNs aren't. There are exemptions for executive employees, administrative employees. We're talking people with a high level of responsibility, a lot of independent judgment, discretion. So there are some narrow exemptions. But in most cases, I would say employers are getting this wrong. And a lot of employers believe that just because you're paid a salary means that you're exempt.
They're called non-exempt.
Yes, they're non-exempt. So most people are not exempt from overtime. If you think you aren't exempt, the Department of Labor actually has some great fact sheets on there. You can look and see if you fall within one of the exemptions. If not, they have to pay your overtime. And the second thing you're talking about is one of the things that I always caution people. Look, if you're fired, if they shove some papers in front of you and say, sign them, don't sign them right then because you're not thinking straight. It's a shock. Losing your job is like a death in the family. It's shocking. And you may be giving up your rights to sue. You may be giving up discrimination claims, unpaid wage claims. You may, what they're probably handing those employees is a release, a general release, or they may call it a severance agreement. And I see severance agreements that have non-compete obligations saying you can't work for a competitor for a year or two. I see all kinds of crazy things in these things. So I'd say take it. Say, I'll take a look at it. I'm going to take it home. Let me take it home. If they say you have to sign it now, and we're not going to let you take it home, then beware, because there's a reason why they don't want you to read it and think about
it. What about comp time instead of salary?
It's not legal in private industry. In some government it is, but they can't make you take comp time instead of paying you the overtime. They have to pay you the overtime. There's been an effort to try to allow that comp time, but so far that has failed.
And you wanted to add something,
yeah,
Cynthia?
I mean, I think we've been talking about one of the many of the factors of why wage theft occurs. And I think one thing we've left out is, and I think Donna mentioned it, was that sometimes employers are just not aware of the laws. Through my research, I've interviewed many, many employers who simply didn't even know what the minimum wage was when I asked them. And I mean,
what is the minimum wage?
Currently in Florida, it's $7.79, and for the federal, it's $7.25.
And who enforces it?
So, great question.
Good question.
Well, here in Florida, I mean, we have the Federal Department of Labor, mm-hmm. but really, that's the issue that because we don't have a state mechanism enforcing our labor laws, essentially, it goes unenforced. We have a state attorney general who has not brought one single wage theft case. Since she's been in office.
She technically does have the authority to do it. I think there was one case, but it was part of another case, and it was just a side issue. But that's one of the problems, and that was one of the arguments that the Florida Retail Federation made in its lawsuit against Miami-Dade County, was that the Florida minimum wage law covered this. But the Florida minimum wage law doesn't do anything about it says what the minimum wage should be, but there's nothing there about enforcing it or how you would collect.
Well, you can enforce it by going to court, of course, but that's long and drawn out and expensive. And most people just don't have the time or the will. You're going to end up missing days from work to go to court and have those hearings.
Or the resources.
Yes, and filing fees, it adds up. And a lot of attorneys won't take those cases.
And why has the Attorney General not brought one suit against?
I would say just the lack of political will. And this is something that we went into as the Wage Theft Task Force. We actually looked at all of the options out there. An ordinance was not our first thought. We went through a long process of a year and a half exploring what was out there because we kept thinking something must be available. And I think it's just simply that, the lack of political will. It's not a priority.
Well, we have a governor and an administration that's very pro-business. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that if you're pro-business, you want to be pro-legitimate business and not these businesses that are ripping people off and not businesses that are competing unfairly by not paying their employees. So I think if you've got a pro-business administration, they should be out there. They should be fighting against these people who aren't paying their employees a fair wage. It's good for everybody if people are paid, because we're dealing with tax dollars that are having to pay for government benefits for people who can't afford to feed their families, and health care and all those things if they're not getting paid and they're not getting the benefits that they're entitled to. So why isn't a pro-business administration taking a harder stance? I'd like to know.
Mm-hmm. And when an offending employer knows that they can get away with this, they're simply going to continue to do that. And it basically perpetuates the problem, knowing that there isn't an enforcement mechanism out there.
We have an emailer, Roxwell, wants to know if it's acceptable for an employer to bring employees into the office for technical training and not pay them for their time.
No. That's a simple answer. No, you have to be paid if you're required to be there for training. And I see this all the time. Oh, you got to come in on the weekends for a training, but you're salaried. We're not going to pay you. Of course, they have to pay you. They have to pay you for the time that you worked.
I suppose also there's a side to this where if someone feels they've been discriminated against and they're owed money, that in the rest of their job, they just let things slide and, hey, I'm not going to go out of my way to do a good job anymore.
Well, so you do see it. It's a vicious cycle, because you see employees, a lot of resentment. There are a lot of morale problems when employers stop paying or start slow paying. And it seems to me that rather than doing that to people, do a layoff or do a partial layoff or something like that, where you're telling people right up front, I can't pay you. Don't let them work knowing you don't have the money in the bank to pay. Do whatever you can to pay them. When you can't do that, when you can't guarantee that they're going to get paid, then tell them you're furloughed, you're laid off, and be honest with them and don't string them along.
And let's talk, talk about the larger impact too. I mean, it's not just, you know, workers who are impacted by this issue, and obviously good law-abiding business owners, but it's also our economies, you know, our local economies. When that worker isn't paid, they don't have the money to pay their mortgage or their rent. They're not spending money and circulating throughout the local economy. That employer is most likely not paying payroll taxes. So it goes beyond just the worker and their family. This has impacts that are detrimental along the state and local levels.
What about contract employees, and what are their rights?
Contract employees, if you're talking about independent contractors, I'd say, again, most employers get this wrong. If the employer controls the time, place, and manner of your employment, they provide you materials, they say you have to be there at a certain time, they can discipline you, you're not a contractor. Most employers misclassify people as contractors to get out of having discrimination laws apply, get out of paying them overtime. And that's wrong. And one of the things that the government has been doing, the federal government has been cracking down, IRS in particular, has really been cracking down on misclassification, because these are employers getting out of paying their share of payroll taxes.
The IRS actually entered into memos of understanding with several states to try to address this issue because of the lost dollars. Unfortunately, Florida is not one of those states that entered into that agreement.
And Jeanette, you wanted to talk, I guess, about the law-abiding businesses?
I do want to really stress the good businesses, because there are a lot of good businesses. We speak to employers all the time that say that it's fine with me if there's a local wage theft ordinance. It doesn't affect me because I pay my employees. There's one gentleman in particular, an arborist, who has had some folks working with him for a long time that had experienced wage theft at their other employer, and he considers them very good employees. And he says his exact comment was that it's hard enough for him to compete in this economy, but it's worse when he has to stand next to a pirate. So there's the people that take advantage of him as well. And like I said, that's been our experience all along, that we've had, even when passing the local ordinance, when dealing with Tallahassee, that there are a lot of positive, good employers who don't think wage theft is okay and are actually hurt by it themselves.
Again, we're speaking about wage theft with Cynthia Hernandez, Donna Ballman, and Jeanette Smith on today's Topical Currents. Another short break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Under mostly cloudy skies, 85 degrees currently in Miami. Just a slight chance of showers this afternoon and this evening, but our rain chances increase as we go throughout the week.
You've reached a certain age. You're viewed as a success. Still, you are not immune. The disease of addiction doesn't discriminate based on age or status. West Palm Beach's Hanley Center is considered a center of excellence for comprehensive addiction treatment and recovery for older adults and baby boomers. Hanley Center for Older Adult and Boomer Recovery. Details at 855-718-2233. Hanley Center, recovery for life. 855-718-2233.
About one in every four people in South Florida don't have health insurance. I'm Tom Hudson. Join us tonight at 7 for the Sunshine Economy on the eve of Obamacare. It's tonight at 7 here on WLRN, made possible by Kaufman Rossen.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, co-host Bonnie Berman, and we resume our conversation with Cynthia Hernandez, Jeanette Smith, and Donna Ballman. Let's take a quick phone call. This is Brad. He's in Hollywood. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Good.
Love the program for years. And thank you for all the fun program you have at WLRN.
Thank you.
You're kind of breaking up a little bit, Brad. You know, to get to it.
I'm doing my best. I'm on the turn. Headed for Hollywood. Miss Ballman, I have a question for you. The last time you were on the program, it coincided with my girlfriend being abruptly dismissed from her position as an RN at one of the medical centers in Palm Beach County. And we called your office and were instructed to go to your website. And I offered this to Richard of the Air First, you know, so we could just pass you a message. But we were directed to your website, and I sent a number of emails to you on your website using that beautiful blue background stuff, but you never responded. I don't want to say that, you know, but I did. I'm sorry.
Well, I think I personally respond to any emails that we get. It's possible, I guess, that there was a glitch, but I apologize for that. But we were having an email issue when we switched over our website. So, but now our contact form should be up and running on the website.
So try it again.
You know, and if you have any troubles, that my direct email address is BallmanD, that's BallmanD, at BallmanFirm.com.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, and I'm driving. Maybe Richard can give it to me when we terminate this phone call. I won't take up any more of your time. I'm looking forward. Thank you.
Okay, I'll put you on hold.
Thank you. Okay, we have an emailer. I was just in a wage theft situation and learned to take a picture of my timesheet when I signed it. My now ex-employer is currently under investigation.
That's excellent. I mean, that's a great way to keep track of it. And I think I would reiterate what we've said earlier and what Donna commented on. Keep track of your own hours as well. And just so that we're clear, under the current law, with or without a local wage theft ordinance, the employer has a responsibility to keep track of your hours. They may not do that. We all know that, so just keep track of them yourselves. If there's a notebook where you say when you go in, when you leave, take a picture of your timesheet, whatever is necessary. And please, if a special word, and I don't know, out to folks that are doing, say, day labor or they're getting a job each day, and please be really clear with who your employer is. Try to find out who that is, because one of the biggest problems is when you weren't paid, you know that the guy that picked you up and took you to work each day, his name's Paco or something, and you don't know anything more. Worst case scenario, get his license tag off of his car. We can locate him that way. But try to know who your actual employer is so that you can be assisted should wage theft occur.
And it's not just day laborers. A lot of people have no idea who their actual employer is. And sometimes it has to do with you get a check from a payroll company or something like that. Sometimes you get a joint employer situation where you've got you're outsourced, but the main employer is the one that controls stuff. So there could be two or more employers that are liable. So do be aware of who the employer is. And if there are related companies, write those down too. If you're getting a check from a company that's other than the one that's giving you your directions, then they could both be liable.
Okay, and we have Steve. Can exempted salaried employee working 44 hours 6 days per week be paid less than 40 hours per week? Our company reduced wages by 5%, reducing the weekly work schedule to 38 hours when business slowed down a few years ago. Now I'm supervising my non-exempt employees working 40-plus hours a week and receiving pay for 38 hours a week.
That's one of the things I caution people. Sometimes people take promotions and don't realize that they may be giving up their right to overtime. So employers, you can get a promotion and you say, yay, I'm now the supervisor. And then you realize, oh my gosh, I'm getting paid less than I was before. So I tell people, ask what's going to happen to your overtime, to your benefits and all of that. Ask if there's going to be any change in your hours before you accept that promotion. Sometimes it's better to say no.
We haven't discussed at all undocumented workers. I guess they're really up the creek.
The employers still have to pay them. And a lot of employers try to get out of it.
They don't want to make any charges. They're
probably afraid to report it.
Right, certainly they're afraid.
Certainly, they're the most vulnerable in the population. Obviously, because one, they may not know what the labor laws are. Two, they don't know that they actually have labor laws and are supposed to be paid for work that they have done. And you know, oftentimes they're retaliated, as Donna was mentioning. When workers demand that they get paid, they are often fired on the spot.
I've never seen a single judge report an undocumented worker to Homeland Security. I've never seen anybody in any of the wage theft programs report an undocumented worker. It's just not that big of a risk. Sometimes employers might go and report them, but the employer is in just as much trouble for having an undocumented worker working for them. So there are a lot of fines on employers. So there's a risk for that employer as well if they retaliate.
And that was one of the considerations in the local program, was to make it accessible to everyone, including undocumented workers, and to do a lot of outreach in the community so that folks knew that this remedy was available to them.
So it's important to note that when you file a claim with the Broward County or the Wage Theft Miami-Dade, and even now Alachua County has a wage theft program, they do not ask you what your legal status is in this country because they do not care.
And it's not pertinent in federal labor law either.
Yeah, it's no excuse. You have to pay. If you let somebody work, whether or not they are legal in this country, you have to pay them.
Okay. How about Palm Beach County with the workers like in Immokalee? And
Palm Beach has no wage theft ordinance. In fact, Dade and Broward are the only ones in Alachua County.
Well, soon to be, January 2014.
Well, they passed it. It goes into effect in January.
It's not in effect.
Palm Beach County doesn't have an ordinance. It does have a resolution and has established a wage theft program through their legal aid society. And the county does help to pay for that program with the idea that it will at least give people somewhere that they can go with folks that are knowledgeable about the issue and can assist them.
There's some real weaknesses, though, to this program because, for example, undocumented workers cannot be helped through this program.
Actually, through Palm Beach County's legal aid, they have some funding that's not attached to documentation status and some funding that's not. Some legal service providers can't help undocumented workers and some can. And I believe they have partial funding.
If you're in Miami-Dade or Broward, is there a website that you can go to learn more, or just the county website? Or?
The Miami-Dade County website, do I have it?
It's if you Google miamidade.gov. And
the ordinance itself is on a website called MuniCode, MUNICODE. .com, so you can look at that. And I know Dade County's website has a link to the program, as does Broward's, but I couldn't tell you the
and
URL.
It's through the Consumer Services Department.
Right, and I can actually give you the phone number, which is 305-375-3677. It's a little complicated to find it through the
county's
website.
We'll put this information up on the Topical Currents Facebook page.
Great.
Or WLRN.org. Website, WLRN.org. Elizabeth has been hired for two different jobs recently. Neither wanted Anyone to take breaks, both expected extra hours without pay based on salary versus hourly. So if I pay you a salary, you can work 60 hours instead of 40. I mention this because it seems to be a trend. I was told specifically, you said you needed a job, so I wasn't supposed to take lunch or breaks. And in a tight job market, what can we do?
Well, there's no law that requires any breaks in Florida.
Not even restroom breaks.
That's correct. Which is a bone of contention with some of my colleagues. But in fact, there is no law that requires even restroom breaks. But if you work through your break, you have to be paid for those hours. So there's a balance there. But still, it sounds like they can't just say you're salaried and not pay you overtime and pay you for all your hours unless you meet one of the very specific exemptions. They have to pay you for all your time.
Okay, here is the website. It's miamidade.gov/business-development.asp. And we will have that. Yeah, but we'll have it on our website. We've been speaking with Cynthia Hernandez. She's with the Research Institute on Social and Economic Policy at FIU. And she's the lead researcher on a project to construct a statewide database of documented wage theft cases. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you for having me.
Indeed.
Jeanette Smith is Executive Director of South Florida Interfaith Worker Justice and member of the Wage Theft Task Force. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Donna Ballman is a Fort Lauderdale-based labor and employment attorney with 20 years in the field. Thank you, Donna, again for coming.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
And that wraps up today's program. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical supervision by Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and downloads of this and previous programs at our website, WLRN.org. More information and links as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program looks at the controversial Affordable Care Act and how it will or may affect Floridians. There are some 3.5 million uninsured in the Sunshine State. And the calendar. On this day in 1791, 222 years ago, Wolfgang Mozart's last great opera, The Magic Flute, is performed for the first time in Vienna. Mozart conducted. Worldwide is the fourth most often performed opera. And on this day in 1924, 89 years ago, the birth of author and playwright Truman Capote in New Orleans. Other rooms, other voices. Breakfast at Tiffany's. And of course, In Cold Blood. One more while we consider baseball's most revered player. On this day in 1934, 79 years ago, Babe Ruth plays his final game as a Yankee. Only 2,500 spectators saw him go 0-for-3. He was then traded to the Boston Braves. Ruth still holds a Major League World Series pitching record. So we leave with a thought from Babe Ruth. After signing a baseball contract larger than the president's salary, quote, "What the hell has Hoover got to do with it? I had a better year than he did." Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Next up, it's Here and Now from NPR News.
This is